Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Barbara Crissett, who is a writer on international affairs and the United Nations correspondent at The Nation magazine and author of several books on Asia. She was the New York Times' chief correspondent in Southeast Asia and South Asia from 1984 to 1991, and later the Times bureau chief at the United Nations. She has also been a diplomatic correspondent in Washington and a reporter in Central America and the Caribbean and Canada. She has an article at The Nation, "Once Again, Senate Republicans Reject International Human Rights." Welcome to Background Briefing, Barbara Crissett.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you again.
And just last week, there was a shocking display of ignorance in the United States Senate. It reminded me of Dean Acheson's remark, Truman's Secretary of State, referring to the primitives. But the primitives came out in spite of the appearance of Bob Dole in a wheelchair, wheeled in by his wife, who was also a United States senator. And then you had John McCain arguing on behalf of the bill to extend the rights of disabled, an American modeled bill that the United Nations had taken up in the international arena. And of course, of the two-thirds requirement under a treaty, they failed because of Rick Santorum managed to get enough of his colleagues to vote against it. Where's the shame, though? I mean, clearly, Senator Kerry was furious, but I don't get the sense in this country that enough people recognize this shameful behavior.
No, I think partly it is because most people in this country don't seem to also understand how the United Nations works, and that's an issue we could talk about for hours at another time. And so when there is a great deal of sort of ignorance across the public about the United Nations system, there's plenty of negative things said about it. There are crazy things said about it. Just today I read that Michelle Bachmann, who is everyone's favorite on the right from time to time, is saying that, you know, that Hillary Clinton and others in the administration are trying to work with the UN, just to make a long story short, to basically abolish the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. This is the kind of thing that gets out there, and because people don't know how the UN works, very often it finds fertile field, you know, and so people believe these things. This is part of the problem. So, you know, if you don't know how ignorant, as John Kerry was trying to point out, how ignorant you are, you know, there isn't sort of room for shame.
Well, but it wasn't always this way. In fact, the United Nations, of course, began in San Francisco and its headquarters are in New York. And in 1948, the landmark Universal Declaration of Human Rights was passed with Eleanor Roosevelt leading the U.S. delegation. The only two countries that didn't sign the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights were Saudi Arabia and apartheid South Africa. So something's happened to the United States in its role there.
Yeah, yes, it has. I agree. Over the years, a lot of things have happened, and there's been a lot of denial of what has happened and instead of an ability to work with it. One thing is that after the end of the colonial era, really the majority of UN nations now come from the developing world. That is the world. We are no longer, you know, the world in every way. So when developing nations votes that seemed to be anti-American, this built up. There was the Zionism is Racism resolution, which was finally overturned, I think, in the late 1990s. But various blocks of people in this country were alienated. I don't think much about the UN is taught in schools anymore. The model UN system, I think, has serious flaws and is pretty superficial. So, all these things have come together, it seems, and Americans have simply drifted away, and maybe from internationalism. It got even worse, I think, after the end of the Cold War, because then there was sort of no focus, and so there was very little attention. You know, you might already know this, but most of the major media organizations have taken full-time correspondents out of the United Nations.
And just to give our audience a perspective on how much the U.S. has become an outlier in the United Nations because of this xenophobia and parochialism and isolationism in the United States Senate that ratifies treaties largely from the South and from the religious right. In the case of the treaty that the U.S. Senate rejected last week, of course, Rick Santorum came in and brought in his severely disabled daughter to argue against a treaty that would have extended, it was called the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, it would have extended U.S. law to become international law, and yet he managed, in fact, to lie about what this treaty contained, saying that the treaty would replace in the United States the rights of parents who have the power under current law over their children, if you will, even though, in fact, the treaty says the opposite. So just to give a sense of how much this is about ideology, dogma, and ignorance, do you think that Santorum really believes that this treaty was doing what he says it was doing when it was doing the opposite, or is he just lying?
Speaking out of ideology, I think that's what it is. You know, he's a former senator now, and that makes it all the more, one could say, disgraceful that he had this much influence. He in fact, has been working on this theme earlier on in the year, too. He may believe it. He may be driven by ideology, but he certainly has no excuse for saying the things that he said because he was a senator. He is a person who wants to be president, and for heaven's sakes, he simply misstated, and I think maliciously, but then that's a personal opinion, the intent and the actual language in this convention. And as you say, this was based a lot on the model that the United States has provided the world with how we look after people with disabilities, not perfectly, but very well.
Well, my understanding that the reason that Santorum and the rejectionists had 38 votes was that they were afraid of the homeschooling lobby, which is a part of the religious right, I guess. How in God's name did that get into the mix?
Well, a lot of things get into the mix. Something called the Friday Facts, which comes out from a Catholic organization that has an outpost at the UN, also sees in every one of these treaties that they, as I wrote, said in their aha moment, it was that it had the word sexual and reproductive rights. In other words, disabled people have the right to a sex life, and you know, being a parent and marriage and whatever else, they see that as somehow, I don't know, forcing abortion on the world. I mean, it's inexplicable, or that this has something to do with gay and lesbian rights, and that the feminists are taking over. There's always some sort of underpinning, and the homeschool movement. It is true, and the United Nations has never had anything to say that I know of, even through UNESCO, about homeschooling.
Now, let's just talk a little about what this rejectionist crowd, as I mentioned, that fit into the category that Dean Acheson, the former Secretary of State under Harry Truman, referred to as the primitives, the power and effect that they've had in denying the U.S. government's ability to ratify these treaties that the U.S. have signed. I'll just go through this list that's in your article at The Nation. The Convention on the Rights of the Child. Only the United States, Somalia, and South Sudan are the holdouts. The Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, which 187 of the 193 UN members have signed, putting the United States on the side of nations like Iran and Sudan. And of course, outside of the human rights arena, you have the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, the Rome Statute creating the International Criminal Court, which the United States in effect created, but is not a member. And then, of course, the Law of the Sea Treaty. So, you know, it's one thing to sort of laugh at the absurdity of these people, but it's another thing when you recognize, when you just go through that list of treaties that haven't been ratified but have been signed by the United States, you recognize the power of these rejectionists.
The power of the rejectionists. And, you know, for people who, it's paradoxical. At the same time, they're talking about how America has lost its place in the world or how we no longer influence other nations. Well, even our best friends are dismayed by this this rejectionist position, which and I might say for a number of years, presidents of both parties have refused on political grounds to fight, and that that has played a part in this too. In other words, not giving up your political capital, your poker chips, in order to press for these things, and then of course taking it to the public. I don't think many people follow these things or write to their members of Congress, senators or representatives. So there's no pressure on them to think again.
But do they see the obvious intellectual inconsistency? And perhaps that's asking for too much. But if the United States is finding itself in rejecting these treaties, particularly about the rights of women and children, in bed with South Sudan, Somalia, Iran, and Sudan, and Saudi Arabia, I imagine, too, on some of them, doesn't that undercut the entire message of this chest beating over the war on terror and all these countries that are on America's axis of evil list? How can you be in bed with people that you're fighting a war against?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, and as I was saying earlier, how can you both want to be a world leader and then want to stand back from the world? Because the world is very different now, as I said. There are a different range of countries that have to be dealt with. Numerically, they are the majority in the world. There are all kinds of things going on that are behind a lot of the ignorance. But I think now it's further dropped into sheer partisanship. I'm just reading today while I was waiting to talk to you, led by a senator from, sorry, a representative from Alabama, an effort to block all the immediate aid to the victims of the Hurricane Sandy disaster. A bitterly partisan thing. People are without houses and things in New Jersey and New York. A bipartisan group of governors went down to Washington. But, you know, even for fellow Americans who are in terrible shape, you get a Republican front against doing anything that could possibly help the president.
What is their objection to helping their fellow Americans who have been the victims of this storm?
Well, and by the way, in the piece I'm reading, it was also mentioned that how quickly a Republican Congress was able to, the Congress in general, it wasn't just a Republican Congress, passed the bill for $62.3 billion in relief for Hurricane Katrina in a matter of weeks. They're now talking about putting this off till next year. They say that in a 77-page plan, they're accusing Governor Cuomo and Governor Christie of not proving that the $60 million, which is less, which the president has requested, is for immediate needs. Now, when people don't have houses, the subway isn't working in parts of the city, I see this as a kind of different stage. In other words, people who don't really know about the intense urban life of a city like New York, talking from Alabama about what is needed up here. I mean, you know, it's in a way the same mentality, and there are going to be other things. But my interest in writing that piece originally too was, apart from the terrible performance over the Disabilities Convention, the idea that this was sending a signal to President Obama: don't bother sending any of these other things up for us, because they're going to all get blocked. And that's bad, because many people, including our allies and friends in Europe and Asia and Latin America, were thinking in the second term of President Obama, the United States could finally catch up with the world.
Well, but you think, though, that the president could make a case and rally the American people? We've got an election coming up in 2014, and if the Republicans get organized as they did in 2010, they may actually increase their hold in the House and even in the Senate. So there's no reason to think that the battle is over because Obama won. To my mind, that somebody has to step up and tell the progressives and the reasonable people in this country that they've got to vote in greater numbers because the Christian nutcases out there that are living in the 14th century and they want to turn America into the Taliban, they vote in lockstep. And, you know, they're going to do all this damage as long as they all show up at the polls.
Well, you know, I think it's a legitimate criticism, and it certainly was in the first 4 years of the Obama administration, that the White House has not played Congress terribly well. And that one would have thought with Joseph Biden in there as vice president, who's got years and years on the Hill, there would be more, I don't know, some people have accused the president of not schmoozing. Other people have simply said they don't have a team that's working with Congress all the time. And he, as I said, has been careful about expending political capital on some of these issues where the Republicans have already said, as Jesse Helms used to say, send that up here and it's dead on arrival. But also, you've got to figure now, he's involved in these very serious fiscal negotiations. And so right at this moment, it may be unfair to say so, but the pattern has been, and the reason perhaps the Obama victory was not greater, was that the White House was not really managing Congress in the way that some other presidents have.
But apropos my point, Barbara, less people voted. As critical as last election was, and many people were terrified at the idea of Romney becoming president and the Supreme Court shifting to the far to the right because Robert Bork would be choosing Romney's nominees, for all of that angst that was expressed, still less people voted in this last election than did in the 2004 election between Bush and Kerry.
Yeah. And that's so. And I don't. What do you think? Why did this happen?
Well, I just think there's a continual erosion of a responsibility on the part of the left in this country, that they are irresponsible and feel alienated and allowing the right wing to take over.
Yeah, I mean, one could say that the left is, of course, divided, and maybe the right will be too before the fiscal crisis is over. But their strong opinions, but the left did stay together. They didn't field another candidate. In the end, various strong voices said, "Don't do it. I mean, don't destroy the Obama campaign." And toward the end, I didn't hear much at this end of the country anyway. That was undermining. But throughout the year, there was quite a lot of criticism of Obama. And you know, maybe one can say the people on the left don't easily fall into line. I don't know.
Right. Well, maybe I'm just influenced by being at Pacifica, where a lot of people reject electoral politics and feel alienated and feel that the world is controlled by five white men in a back room and that there's nothing you can do.
That's interesting, because isn't that a complete mirror image of people who think the world is controlled by crazy socialists out there who you know, who are going to take away our sovereignty and all that stuff. I mean, it's tragic, and it's even more tragic because there are so many wavering democracies around the world, and the United States is the obvious country that has been doing this for several hundred years. And so, you know, the others can use the help for new problems, for global crises, for everything else. And so it's particularly frightening if the United States has both a rejectionist front and others who just don't want to work in politics anymore or in international organizations. That it's happening not just here, it's happening in other countries as well.
Well, Barbara Crosetto, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Barbara Crosetto, who is a writer on international affairs and the United Nations correspondent at The Nation magazine and author of several books on Asia. She was the New York Times' chief correspondent in Southeast Asia and South Asia, and later the Times bureau chief at the United Nations. She's also been a diplomatic correspondent in Washington and a reporter in Central America, the Caribbean, and Canada. She has an article at The Nation, "Once Again, Senate Republicans Reject International Human Rights." Hope to the need again, life to a baby, giving care for free, cause there is freedom around us. We have everything we need, and I will care for you, cause you care for me, and we all have opinions. Some of them get through, but